and the call is recorded. Okay, good. So welcome everyone on Aries Working Group call, morning edition. Today we have some special guests who will present a concept of the universal wallet, the specification which has started shaping. To everyone new, please, if you are first time on the call, maybe we'll do a quick round of the introduction. If you would like to introduce yourself to the rest of the community, feel free to raise your hand, speak, and then we'll go on with the agenda. Okay. Quick announcements. One very interesting one, decentralized semantic working group was accepted in the trust over IP. So we probably will start the first call in this month. There is still some kind of organization stuff ongoing, but within the working group, we have over 40 attendees or people who are willing to join. Basically, the main topic about decentralized semantic is related with the data semantic and the way how we structureize the data and enable the data flows. So everyone welcome to join. The information about the working group is under the link within the wiki page. Another thing which I wanted just to mention about, I don't know how many of you is aware of GaiaX project. This is something which recently was bootstrapped by some big companies in Europe. Basically, the idea is to create a kind of decentralized ecosystem for the data and let's say cloud, specifically in the IoT, but as well in the automotive industry and some other aspects of the digital lives. The idea is to create some kind of European cloud solutions, taking into consideration the digital identity, the sovereignty of the users, the user-centric approach, and more. I will put later on links here so you can read it up. There are some meetings organized by those guys, which everyone can attend, some recordings from the past events. So very interesting stuff and a lot of big companies involved in that initiative. Good. Any updates from the related calls? Anyone would like to throw a few words about stuff which is going on other working groups?
Just real quick, tomorrow is our week to have the Identity Implementers Working Group. So it's at the following hour tomorrow, and we go over all the various things that happen in the different working groups. And I've also invited Oliver Tarbut to come and talk to us about the self-issued OpenID Connect provider PSYOP technologies, so that we can figure out how to better interface decentralized identity with existing systems. And so I think that would be a great presentation, and whoever wants to join, it's the following hour tomorrow.
Okay, perfect. Could you put the link to the how to join the meeting, so everyone else who are not aware of this working group, where they can find the details?
Yes. Would you like me to drop it in the chat or just put it on the wiki page?
Here? If you have access to the wiki, then put it directly there. That will be the easiest.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else?
The DIDCOM working group Mondays. This last Monday, we had a compare and contrast with the Signal protocol by Tobias Looker that was quite informative. There's a bunch of stuff that we're doing. There's some advantages that we've got, and there's some opportunities to leverage some of the work that they've done carefully so as to not they have some weird licensing around their stuff, but to end up with perfect Ford secrecy in DIDCOM V2. So that was a really good conversation, and we meet every week.
Okay, great. Thank you for the update. Anyone else? Okay, good. Let's move on to the quick update on the working items. Let's go quickly. If anyone have any updates related with the ARIS protocols or ARIS agent test harness. And this is what I know, and maybe a lot of people saw that in the context of the ARIS agent test harness, there is a bounty from BC Gov asking for support to build up some back channels integration stuff in that space. I think there is, I can get the information from the chat and paste it here so for everyone else. But any updates regarding those working groups? Anyone would like to share?
Just to update on the ARIS shared section there. So just been working on the last part, the secure storage for the last bits. Be doing a more in-depth update on the noon call. And then shortly returning to Indie VDR to tidy that up a bit and Indie shared. The repo is not available yet for the ARIS store, but it will be later today.
Okay. Could you paste the link later on to the repository?
Sure.
That would be great. Okay, any other updates? Akapai?
No releases in the last little while. We've been continuously adding small improvements and should probably wrap those up into a patch release by next week.
Okay, great. Any update from other frameworks? Go, .NET?
Yes, I have a few updates for the .NET framework. we're working on two things. One is we're adding Swagger endpoints for ASP.NET Core for all of the functionality in ARIS. We'll try to match the endpoints to what Akapai has so that they're familiar to people in sense of functionality. Data contracts might be different, obviously. And the second feature is adding presentation proposal for the spec into the ARIS framework.
Perfect. Thank you for the update. Okay, any other frameworks? Okay, good.
Hey, yep. Quickly, there's been an issue reported on the ARIS the Akapai plugin for the toolbox, and I am tracking a fix for that. The majority of it's been fixed, and I'm tracking some other ones. So if you are using or attempting to use the plugin with the most recent 0.5.1 build of Akapai, that fix should be available shortly.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good. So if there is no more updates from the items, let's move on to our main agenda. And as I mentioned today, we have Ori, who is one of the co-author of the Universal Wallet specification. So Ori, the stage is yours. If you could just give us a short introduction, who you are, what you do, and then we can start our discussions and your presentation. Do you need to share the screen or?
No, I don't. If you could just leave this up as is and maybe, you know, drive around as people ask questions, that would be awesome.
No problem. Okay, stage is yours.
Awesome, thank you. So hello everyone. I'm Ori Steele. I'm CTO and co-founder at Transmute, and we're a small Austin, Texas-based company working on decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials, mostly in supply chain traceability use case. I am a co-editor of the DID spec registries under the W3C and co-editor of the SciTree spec at the DIF, which is a specification for building scalable decentralized identifiers. And it's the same protocol that Microsoft uses for their IonDID method. So I spent a lot of time with the standards, and in particular these W3C standards. And this universal wallet spec is basically an attempt to fill a gap that we've experienced as a company in basically the relationship between data models that are defined in existing standards and implementations that assume those data models and some relationships between them. At a high level, especially working in the blockchain and cryptocurrency world, we've been working with cryptographic keys that control cryptocurrency and cryptographic keys that control verifiable credentials. And the DID spec and the verifiable credentials data model spec are very credential oriented. And we often need to use same keys or similar keys for currency related activities. And so this spec really was born of the need to have a single data model representation that didn't redefine any of the data model attributes of the DID spec or the verifiable credentials data model spec, but that would work for a cryptocurrency and credential related activities. And so really what it is it's assuming that you implement the W3C data models and assuming that you have a wallet implementation out there that exists today in software. We're going to assume that you're not going to make any changes to that wallet. And so the question is, can we describe the stuff that's in your wallet using JSON in such a way that you could export some set of data model attributes from that wallet and import them into another wallet and have some kind of data portability, data continuity? The spec is fairly ambitious. I mean, I think there's areas of it that are probably alarmingly ambitious for some people. But really what it comes down to is it's a common set of vocabulary for things that get stored in a wallet and some standard representations of those things in JSON and a set of abstract interfaces that describe how those things are related to each other that you can make concrete implementations of, and you'll gain wallet functionality based on that. So, for example, issuing a verifiable credential is a function of, key material and a credential, template, and it outputs a verifiable credential. And transferring cryptocurrency is a function of key material and some metadata about the cryptocurrency and the recipient. And the output is some kind of transaction, which when shared with a ledger, eventually yields the transfer. Those interfaces, like transfer cryptocurrency or issue credential, they're abstract interfaces, but they have some common data model, attributes of them. And the idea with this specification is most wallets that are sort of attempting to be privacy preserving are keeping track of the things that you're doing and helping warn the user, when you're about to create a new relationship, disclose new information, or join two previously unjoined anonymity sets. And so the idea with the data model and the interface is that they work together to provide a standard description of what wallets are doing in the wild. And before I go, much, much further, I want to underscore again that this specification is about describing what wallets do today in a common vocabulary and language. It's definitely not about telling them how they have to implement wallet software. So for example, there are demos of it that work with MetaMask in the browser. There's demos of it that work with encrypted data vaults, secure data stores. And they don't make any change. There's no changes to those fundamental data models or the way that those systems want to store data. And so, we're really eager to see And there are, in the specification, there are some examples around indie credentials and representing them in a way that you might be able to move them from one point to another safely. So I think I'll stop there. And I'd much rather just have this be interactive and take as many questions as possible and kind of, you know, walk through the parts that are interesting to the group.
Do you mind if I offer some comments, Ori?
Yeah, go ahead.
So Ori and I have talked about this previously, and after I committed to being involved in submitting issues and everything else, I then took most of a week off. So I haven't done any of that, but there's some aspects of it here that I think are incredibly important. The data model section is, we've talked in the afternoon call a couple of times ago about how we might approach import, export, and the various aspects there. And there's a whole bunch inside the data model stuff that lines up really pretty much perfectly with what I was thinking. The interface perspective is a little bit interesting, mostly because some of the design goals behind the interface have actually been present in Indie as a source project for quite a while, meaning the wallet's designed with interfaces that that prevent key leakage and do some of those things and to the goals that Ori had talked about, right? From an Aries perspective, like these concepts are not particularly new, but I think it might be valuable in communicating sort of good wallet design and practices to those that may not be as familiar with them. And so they can be an overall benefit. I don't have any conclusions necessarily, but I wanted to mention that I have looked at this and I love it. And I think that this is the beginnings of some really cool stuff. One thing that I will mention is that the data model doesn't necessarily have to be universally applicable. Meaning, if your wallet implementation doesn't do anything with currency, you can simply omit the currency section in what it exports, and the rest of it is still super highly valuable. It's not an attempt to make sure that all wallets have all the same functions, but if they do have that data, that it is in a common format that can be moved between implementations.
Yep, and the same thing applies to the interface section. If you're not about, obviously if you're not about transferring cryptocurrency, then you probably are gonna ignore both the currency data model and the transfer interface. Or your wallet might be only about cryptocurrency, in which case you're going to ignore all this verifiable credentials stuff and just focus on, you know, the transferring of cryptocurrency and, you know, that kind of thing. And I think I've said it already, but I just keep repeating it until someone says stop. But we know that, you know, things like Indie Wallet exist, things like Uport exist, MetaMask exists. And the idea when you're importing some wallet export that was generated according to the specification is that you're going to be iterating over some structured data that abides by a specification, and you're going to be loading that data into your internal wallet representation. So you're not going to have to change anything about the way that you have organized your wallet data structure internally. But you will probably need to write some kind of import adapter and export adapter to get in and out of a common interface.
Okay, great. I will have a couple of questions that maybe let's pull some people from the audience. Anyone else have some questions regarding the specification or overall topic?
I'm interested in the querying functionality. How will this support querying single objects per identifier, or will we be able, or will line expressions can be passed to it? What are some considerations around this?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So basically, one thing that I've said, the querying is one of these places where wallets have built various different data structures. So some wallets are querying over data that's sort of encrypted or tagged Indy SDK, I believe, supports that kind of functionality. Others assume that the wallet is in a trusted environment and operating queries over plain text objects. The way that the query interface for this is defined today is assume a collection exists and that you're writing some MapReduce functions over that collection. But the interface pieces of this are all abstract. So the concrete implementation of how you would want to handle that is up to you. And I would say that querying is probably the most, if not, I would say it's the most, it's the area of the spec that I'm the least sure about. Because it's not clear to me whether it's reasonable to assume that all of the objects in the wallet are going to be plain text. So it's sort of like the way that this is written is kind of assuming that you actually have them stored as plain text and you can write, you know, a MapReduce query over them that would be fairly complex. So you could count all of the different kinds of credential, you know, currency that you had. You could count the number of times that you added a note about a specific verifiable credential. You could count the number of connections, or you could count relationships between connections, things like that with MapReduce over plain text objects. But I think, you know, there's the other piece of this is the concept of wallet contents here is it's a collection of these data model objects. It's not necessarily the case that those are all of the data model objects that are ever associated with this particular wallet. For example, you might be syncing wallet contents from a number of different locations, and this query interface can only really operate on what it has to operate on, basically. So it's similar to all of the other indexing analytics problems. If your data is like highly segregated and secured and you know, opaque, it's very hard to build rich searching, querying, or analytics functionality on top of that.
Thank you.
I was curious about the correlation feature.
Yeah.
Right? There's the one correlation ID that you have on each object. It feels like maybe that should be a collection of IDs or.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea behind the correlation like feature was there are certain wallet contents that are linked together through activities that are externally observable. So as you know, if you imagine generating entropy, creating keys, and starting your journey as a brand new, untraceable, unlinked identity, as you start to do things that are observable to network adversaries, there's a certain set of information and relationships that are known to them. And the idea with the correlation ID is that your wallet should help warn you about what other people can see about the relationships between things that you're holding. I think the first version of this with correlation on all of the objects is starting to feel like it's a terrible mistake. And there is an issue open about this, which is like basically saying, should correlation be its own object that relates things, or is it an attribute of all existing things? Because the thing is that as you're using your wallet and your wallet contents over time, the idea is that correlation relationships are updating. And it could be that you are actually going to be forced to do some pretty terrible updates if it's embedded in all of the objects. So I think right now we're sort of leaning towards a big refactor of the way that correlation works, but its mission is to help the wallet owner or the wallet controller know about how their wallet contents have been correlated externally and help protect them. You know, for example, if I have two different personas, two different sets of key material, and I start to try and transfer a cryptocurrency or a credential between those two entities, that's it's an anonymity set destroying activity, right? Like I'm about to make a relationship between two things that were unrelated in a way that, you know, could have privacy implications. So by tracking correlation, the wallet could actually warn you that you're about to do that kind of thing. So that's its mission, but I think its implementation right now is not the greatest, and we're still trying to figure out what the best way of representing that is. And I know that, you know, especially within the Aries community, there's, you know, connections, and I'm kind of hoping that maybe there's a better abstraction or some kind of better approach that is more popular within Aries and Indie that we can maybe generalize for this.
I mean, it seems like the wallet isn't going to be able to do much to track that directly, that the application that's hosting it needs to have all the information about any potential correlations and kind of opt into adding it to the wallet somehow. Maybe for simplification, it's easier if everything is owned by a specific profile, and then you just track correlations between profiles.
Yeah, so there is a concept of, you know, profile in the data model, and it's sort of I think the way that the spec is written, it's like initially the thought was you would create a profile, you would create key material that was linked to one specific profile, and then you could ask basically using the querying semantics for all of the contents related to a profile or that had been linked to that profile through some correlating activity. But I totally agree with you that the application is performing the activities that might yield a correlation, but those activities are probably interface related things. Or if they're not, I guess it's certainly the case that the correlation object will need to be updated without knowledge of the interface. So for example, sending of messages or sort of like publicly announcing that two keys are related on Twitter is not defined in the interface, but if you did that, you would want to be able to record that somewhere in some way. So I think it's a really great point you bring up.
Go ahead, Andrew.
I was just gonna say that it might be helpful if, you know, the application can insert knowledge about a correlation, but then the wallet fills in the implications about dependent correlations and the results of that.
Yeah. Yep. I think correlation is another area of the spec that, you know, we're obviously considering refactoring the entire way that it's represented right now. So it feels very unstable.
One of the thoughts that I had around the correlation is that I think there's a balance between providing the right useful tool that guides the right behavior and having so much of an opinion that it might be difficult for some implementations to use. And so like the profile things sort of make sense, but I like the idea of allowing tags to be used, like a list of correlation tags. And the benefit there is that there's a variety of ways you can do that. It could be totally profile based, meaning everything is tagged with the profiles that it's associated with, but it could also be done in more of a piecemeal way. And that allows the software, the ability to, the agent software, the ability to sort of manage that. Well, one of the mental struggles I have with this spec is that I think it's doing two really important things, but together, and I struggle with that. And I have, there's issues and stuff that I need to comment on and things related, but I like the idea of the data model. I struggle with the idea of the interface being in the same spec because it feels like it's being far more opinionated, and perhaps that's exactly the goal, but it's being far more opinionated about how the underlying software must be written in order to use the import export pieces of this. And so I like that work, but one of my thoughts is that it might exist better in two separate pieces, meaning the data model that we use to enable portability around various pieces of software. And then the design interface that gains you the benefits and helps you support the data model that that exists.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, another there's two comments that I would have about that. Like, one is that I think the trouble around the representation of correlation and whether or not everything needs to use it, I think will be a lot easier if we can centralize correlation in its own object and just say, you know, if you don't care about this, just don't use this kind of data model object, right, which tracks the relationship between these things and that, you know, can be updated. But I think it'll be a lot easier to pick and choose the functionality that you want if it's only in one kind of representation, if correlation is a top level data model concept. And regarding the interface, it's the main point around it was to explain how data model objects are related and how they are combined and yield further data model objects. But it's always been in this specification meant to be entirely abstract, and there, you know, the spec itself is abstract. I mean, there is a reference implementation that supports the interface and the data model the way that it exists today, but the spec itself is abstract. It might be the case that the interface should just become entirely informative and or like, you know, basically pushed into a place in the specification where not only is it abstract, but it's also very clear that you pretty much don't need to implement these specific methods in any format with any specific naming associated with them. The one piece of pushback that I would kind of have about that is we've seen a lot of bifurcation between the cryptocurrency wallet world and the verifiable credentials world. And I think from a standards perspective, it might be helpful to have a set of interfaces somewhere that puts both of those kinds of things in the same list so that you could say, look, like your wallet might not support all of these functionalities, but if you're holding key material of a certain type, you should be aware that your wallet could support this kind of functionality, and users who are importing and exporting according to the standard might want to open feature requests that say, hey, you know, you let me transfer cryptocurrency all day long with your wallet, but I actually need to do a verifiable presentation with it. Like, I don't know. Definitely up for debate.
I need to totally agree with the fact that the way users think about wallet, we've kind of had these two separate worlds of money and credentials. You know, money is more founded. It was earlier. Credentials are newer, but we need to help people realize that there's a bunch of, you know, really huge benefit here. One of the things, for example, that I imagine you doing with the contacts that you have, you know, that you have a did is actually paying them, right? Whether it be a store or whether you're sending, you know, a buddy $5 for your part of the pizza or whatever, that's a super useful thing. And so being able to combine the communication about a thing with the ability to pay that person, I think is incredibly valuable.
Yeah, hello, this is Victor from SIGPA. I wanna say as well that actually this is very funny because we actually at SIGPA, we believe in the conversion of identity and currency. And actually, we are working on a prototype which is mixing both things. We are exploring CBDC, the idea of digital cash. And one of the ideas that we are having is, so let's say that if you want to transfer money to your friend or to someone else, you know, depending of the amount, you want to have a threshold, and then you want to have this, let's say, anonymous transaction or not, no, depend of the amount. So here is that we have this sort of use cases where, for instance, if you want to send $100, so eventually you want to do a KYC. So you want to prove that, I don't know, you have a bank account or whatever is needed in order to meet this KYC. But if you want to send less money, let's say $50 or $5, then you want to do it sort of meaning cash, so anonymously. So I think, first of all, the idea of having a wallet for both things for us makes a lot of sense. And I think this is really good. Then my question here, my follow-up question would be more about the HD wallets and somehow is related with correlation. For us, I think it's really important. And I don't know, it's something I think that should be taken into account, the idea of that if you wanna, let's say, have a wallet that support anonymous payments, correlation, or let's say HD wallets, is, I think, is something really important. The idea that the user cannot be correlated with the payment.
Yeah. So, I mean, HD wallets, for those who aren't super familiar with them, are a way of tracking a set of an infinite set of public private key pairs from a commonly, so usually there's a mnemonic, something that's easy to remember, that's converted to entropy. And then that entropy is converted to an infinite set of public private key pairs. And so in the case of, you know, popular blockchains like Bitcoin and Ethereum, you can actually have the same entropy that yields different public private key pairs for Bitcoin and Ethereum based on this concept of a HD path. And this has been very widely adopted within the cryptocurrency ecosystem. And so in the integration section of the specification, one of the things that we're trying to do is go look at all of the wallet-like things that have had major adoption and make sure that this data model and vocabulary can apply to and describe what they've done. If it can't do that, the spec is dead, basically. Like, we should be able to say what has worked well in the, you know, cryptocurrency community, or, you know, in Apple Pay or in OpenPGP, that kind of thing. So I agree completely about the value of HD wallets. And I think a lot of people in the identity ecosystem are maybe not super aware of the value of generating, you know, a secret and then generating public key pairs from that secret, because it actually, it kind of changes some of the storage requirements actually for how you're going to represent this stuff. Instead of having like 100 public private key pairs that are each, you know, identified with a specific identifier, you can have a single secret and some metadata about that secret, and you actually have a representation that will hold an infinite set of key pairs. And then you can basically pull out the ones that you've actually used, or not. You know, you could choose not to pull that information into your wallet. One of the most common things that happens, you know, with cryptocurrencies and the use of HD wallets is you'll enter your mnemonic, which is basically like entering an infinite set of private keys, by the way, which is pretty dangerous to move around. But you'll do that, and then using this HD wallet scheme, that a wallet system can discover all of the currency and tokens associated with all of those accounts on a ledger. So it's very, very helpful if you're moving between you know, MetaMask, which is a wallet technology for Ethereum, but then you're moving to another wallet, like maybe the Uport wallet on your Android phone. If you move the same mnemonic, those wallets can actually discover all of the currency and tokens associated with those accounts automatically based on that HD wallet scheme and the HD path scheme.
Maybe one following up question or comment regarding that, because we used that approach to actually apply it to the identity as well. So we came from the perspective of the Ethereum ecosystem, where we had a cryptocurrency wallet, and we said, okay, now we would like to have identity. And then obviously we came up with this idea to why not to reuse this kind of generated seed to bootstrap the identity directly from it. And then you can have identity and then eventually any type of the crypto associated to the same mnemonic. I'm just wondering if you see any dangers in, obviously, as you said, I mean, playing around with the mnemonics is basically like having infinite amount of the keys, which as soon as this one is compromised, everything else is compromised, right? The difference between the cryptocurrency is that obviously you can discover all the stuff which is already on the blockchain, because basically there is nothing in your wallet as a kind of asset or something which you need to transfer across. But identity is slightly different, that you can't discover what kind of credentials you have associated with that specific pair of the keys, or maybe data related with it, and so on. So what are the dangers of using HD approach for identity versus the one which is purely for the cryptocurrency? Because I see more use cases in the crypto space than actually identity space.
That's a really great question. I think so. It is the case that credentials are signatures from specific keys, relationships between specific keys. They get, because of their nature as things that are passed around, they become known to network adversaries. So if you have, it's similar to the cryptocurrency sort of like worst case scenario of I tweeted my mnemonic. If you've used a mnemonic in an HD system to generate credentials, and then that's disclosed, there's some ability of discovery and correlation that some network adversary with, you know, great surveillance powers would have. I think it's a little bit more limited, like you mentioned, but it's still a concern. One piece I want to highlight about this in particular, because we're talking about private keys and secrets here, is best practice is definitely never to transfer secrets ever. So the export functionality here, there's examples in here that show exporting private keys. And, you know, I have to make this super clear because this is being recorded. You do not want to export private keys. You want to generate them in one location. You want to use them from that location. And you might get a reference to the public key. Like if it's a KMS system that's hardware isolated, you can get a reference to that key that you can export. But ideally, the private key bytes are never exported. There are a lot of cases, obviously, where we are exporting sensitive material and importing sensitive material. The mnemonic case is a good example of it. But this specification has the ability to support the concept of exporting something that is hardware isolated or software isolated. And ideally, that's what you're doing. Like we should try our best not to export raw private key bytes if we can avoid it.
That's actually a very kind of dangerous space, because obviously from the perspective of the user, you want to be sure that in case if something will happen, that you have a chance to recovery from whatever happens, right? So for example, if you're using a trusted secure module or secure element from, for example, from your mobile phone, right? There is no way to extract the key from that hardware module, right? But if you lose your phone, you're basically losing everything. So if you rely on the key which is generated in the secure element, and you're building on top of it all the stuff related with crypto and identity, then obviously if you lose the phone or something happened with the phone, you're completely lost, right? So obviously from the perspective of the usability, we need to provide something that in case of hardware failure, software failure, compromising the device or whatever, that you still have possibility to move away from it and go somewhere else. So there is this challenge of how to do it in the right way, from one side securely, but as well that the people can understand it. And mnemonic was one of the kind of answer for that, because then it's kind of step before you put the secret key into your hardware, and then eventually you need to securely write it down somewhere, which, as you probably heard of those cases and saw how it works, many people just take a picture of that, or copy and paste it to the file on the hard drive, which is not secure and stuff like that. So that's the problems which actually we need to address here. How to bootstrap the whole system in a way that still is secure, but in case if the user lose the device or something happened, that it still be able to recover from that.
Yep. Yeah. That's a great point. So I have. There's a couple comments on that. Like, I think the first comment is just because if you hit a phone and destroy the secure enclave, you're going to lose the ability to use those keys, doesn't mean that you should lose the ability to access information that was encrypted with those keys. So if you have more than one device and you've done proper authenticated encryption, I might hit your phone, but you can still go to your desktop and recover encrypted material that was protected with a different set of keys. And it's still a best practice to use hardware isolated keys if you can. But you're totally right that you have to be very careful about how you design that system. there are one part of this spec joins up to a number of other things. And one of them is this concept of secure storage for wallet contents. So however you're deciding to do that, this spec basically doesn't really care about that. It shows some examples of, you know, if you were to store wallet contents in this secure data stores or encrypted data vaults. And actually I have a demo of that that works that hopefully at some point I'll be able to give to that working group. But you know, the idea with that is there's some set of authentication authorization material, which you should be in control of, like a mnemonic, something like that. And you should use that information to authenticate to key management servers, things like that. And then you should use those in turn to access storage mechanisms that are storing encrypted data. And then when you unwrap all of that back again, you should be able to get back a wallet contents that isn't just the authorization material, but is also the wallet contents. So that's kind of outside of the realm of the spec though, because it's really about how do I get wallet contents and how many different places do I store wallet contents? Whereas this spec is really just about what does a particular kind of wallet content look like? And how are those wallet content items related to each other?
And one more question I'm curious about, because within the definition here, obviously you're referring to the regular wallet as a kind of analogy of what the digital wallet is, that everyone actually using the wallet in a slightly different way puts there a different staff, even, you know, from different cards for maybe photos of the family or some maybe valuable things, so maybe keys or things like that. And I'm just wondering, because within the definition here, first of all, you're defining a universal wallet as a digital wallet which is able to support cryptocurrency, verifiable credentials, and the cards. And the cards are very kind of shape-oriented, let's say, definition. I don't know if that's intentional or that's the kind of must-have, but I'm just wondering if you thought about the different types of the items which you actually can have within this universal wallet in the data models which you are describing here, or you want to limit only to those and keep it narrow so we can cover only that part at least.
Yeah. So the first thing is part of another reason that, you know, we developed this specification is there was recent work within the diff on the glossary group did a survey of, you know, what's a credential, what's a wallet, what's an agent. I think those were the terms that they defined. And the thing that we learned is that the community has disjoint concepts of what wallet means. And so part of what we're attempting to do here is just say, well, like if some people think wallets mean this subset of wallet functionality and other people think it means this other subset, let's just say that it means both of them and formalize that it means both of them. So that each person's concept of a wallet is accurate, but also just sort of like happens to be focused on the things that they care about. So the analogy to the physical wallet, you know, piece of this is there's usability ideas behind a lot of the structure that we've taken here. So you'll see it in the spec in cases where we have like name and description and image on things, because we know that at some point this data model will need to be rendered. And we've learned from working with verifiable credentials that the omission of standardized ways of including an image and name and description has really harmed the verifiable credentials data model. Like everyone has to basically implement their own version of that stuff or wrap their object with some kind of metadata presentation, you know, information to support that. So the reason this card thing exists is that in your wallet today, you have business cards and you have other just pieces of information that you carry around, you know, and indie wallets today, I think, do support arbitrary data, but the interface is kind of, it's not built around telling people that you should go and just put arbitrary data in your indie wallet. We have a sort of similar challenge here with cards. I mean, a card could be like the fact that it's labeled as this like visual rectangular object is meant to make people think about something that you really could store in your wallet. but there's a, like, where do you draw the line in terms of things that you will let people store in their wallet, you know, for example. So I don't really have a great answer for it other than to say that there's specifications and there's usability concerns that arise from applying the specification. And oftentimes the specification just won't think about UX at all. And this specification in particular is trying very hard to think about UX. It's why we have this whole interface section, which is sort of uncomfortably, you know, specific in combining two things, because we know that the data model will be used in some way. And similarly for the wallet definition and card definitions, we know that these data models will be rendered at some point. So the specification should basically attempt to provide guidance and sane defaults and recommendations around things that we know where, when we know there's going to be a usability issue, we should attempt to address it in the specification if we can safely. But obviously there's great danger there in like coupling your presentation and data model, you know, uncomfortably together. So it is a delicate balance, and I'm not sure that we've gotten it right so far, but that's kind of why this stuff is written the way that it is.
Right. And then in the context of the definition here, because quite often when we are talking about a kind of digital wallet, we always mention like a couple of things which are in to explain to people what exactly it is. And obviously the valuables, so like cryptocurrency or any kind of other digital assets, doesn't matter. Basically, it's something which is valuable for you, and then you can transfer it and has some properties which actually are common. Then we have identities, which basically I assume that it's mostly about verifiable credential, because it's just a set of the attributes which describe you as an individual, company, entity, whatever you are, and defining your identity. And obviously you can have a multiple sets of identities, you can have a multiple profiles. So for example, identity which I'm using here could be different than I'm using in my company or in my private life. And then you can shuffle that and explain to people how actually that's function together. And obviously one of the first one of the questions which people are asking is, okay, but how about all those digital identities which are rolled out across different countries like ADAS or any kind of sort of the digital identity provided by the government or any other organization, which they are not based on the verifiable credential at all. They are slightly different. In many cases, part of some kind of PKI infrastructure and stuff. But did you took that into consideration as well during research for that specification? How you would address those, let's say, centralized identities, digital identities, which are already up there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, you know, the idea is that probably those identity, you know, representations, if they are expressed in some JSON or, you know, structure, or if it's possible to represent them in JSON, then it should be possible to represent them with a card in some format, right? So, you know, a card is just a visual interpretation of some JSON information according to a data model. So I think, you know, the idea behind the card in here was to basically make a catch-all that we could represent arbitrary data with that would also have some of the UX you know, feelings around what a wallet is, because, you know, like you have your driver's license card, you have your, you know, permanent resident card, you have your you know, passport card, things like that. Even if they aren't according to the verifiable credentials data model, valid verifiable credentials, you still store them in your wallet in some representation. So we definitely want to account for that. And that's part of why we have the naming the way that we do. Regarding verifiable credentials, there are initiatives, you know, especially within the United States, underway to try and formalize some of those, you know, identity credentials using the verifiable credentials data model. So permanent resident card's a good example of that. There was recent work by the Department of Homeland Security Silicon Valley Innovation Program on basically creating a permanent resident card using the verifiable credentials data model. And in those cases, that card itself is a verifiable credential. It's 100% conformant with that data model specification. And when you look at the credential definition in the data model, you'll notice that that is a case where we did not add name and description and image and things like that. We just took the data model as it's defined by the VC data model and say, this is wallet contents. I guess the point I'm making is that some of these, some of the sensitive wallet information is defined by external bodies. And in that case, the opinion of the specification is we can't make any changes to it by itself. We'll just import it the way that it's represented. And if we need to annotate it in some way to make it usable, we can do that with metadata.
So does that mean that the card is some kind of bucket where actually you can throw any kind of payload into it? And if so, do you assume any kind of, put it another way, if the card is a very static thing that you basically can have it in your wallet but actually doesn't have any interfaces or any possibility to do any actions, or it's possible to have something which basically, depending on the type of the payload you have there, you can do something with it. Because obviously, if the card is just a representation of the verifiable credential, then you have the feature which comes from the verifiable credential, right? You can exchange it, you can verify it, you can issue it, you can basically check some attributes within it. But if you're importing like your loyalty card, right, where obviously it could have just a barcode which can be scanned, so the graphical representation basically do the work. But for example, if you would like to have extension for it for the NFC, does the card through the wallet will provide that, or this is something which is out of the scope of that and you don't want to extend that that piece here and treat it as a kind of static payload and that's it?
That's a really awesome question. So, I mean, I think generally the idea here is that, obviously, like you said, verifiable credentials have an inferred interface. So they support things like issuance, presentation, verification. I think the way that I would like to see card be used is that versions of card that have a standard interface, like a loyalty card that can be scanned, or cards that are consumable, or a digital representation of an NFC card, which it's possible. I've done a bunch of NFC work recently, so I'm very excited about that use case in particular. When it's possible to pull an interface that's standard out of this sort of generic, like any type almost for wallet contents, I think we should do that. As standards organizations, like that's kind of our job, is to find the reusable interface components and the common data model attributes and document them in such a way that people can say, they can point and they can say, look, this is the kind of thing that I'm talking about and it's defined over here. So I see card in its current form in the spec as basically being a thing that people could point to be like, anything is here. And I'm not sure that that's incredibly useful, but it's definitely a starting point. I'd much prefer someone to pull out the concept of a card with a barcode, formalize that under the data model, and define a set of interfaces around cards with barcodes so that you could point to them and say, I have this thing in my wallet and it's defined over here by this specification. And if you want interoperability with me, like you can support the interface on this or not. You can just handle this as arbitrary data.
Perfect. Thank you very much for the explanation and answering all the questions. Before we'll close it down, just one last question. What is the roadmap for that specification, and what if people would like to contribute to it, where they should go? Obviously the website is here and the GitHub repo behind it, yep. But maybe you could provide some input on that?
Yeah, so I've been making the tour of all of the different working groups. So in addition to all of those editor roles that I have, I'm also the current chair of DIFF Interoperability. And what I think that means is that I have a responsibility to visit all of the neighboring communities within DIFF. And you know, I'm a member of the W3CCCG, I'm a member of DIFF. I'm not very active in this community in particular, so I'm very honored to be here and be able to present to you all. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share this work so far. So what we're doing right now is we're kind of making the rounds, finding out where interested parties are and where there's going to be there's some interest in collaborating, supporting, et cetera. And then the way that it's written right now, it's obviously oriented towards the W3C and probably would go to the W3CCCG at some point. And if that happens, I will transfer the repo directly with the commit history and issues and all of that stuff there. If it doesn't go there, it would probably go to DIFF, in which case I would transfer the repo with all the issues and commits there. So if you want to contribute, feel free to open issues here. Like, we're going to preserve the commit history. If you contribute substantially, after some point in time, I think it'd be very appropriate to add you as an author of the specification. I think the license, the way that it's written right now, it's all oriented towards the W3C. I hope I've got that right. But we'll certainly find out after I finish giving the last presentation to the DIFF, which is some point in the next week or so. And then we will formally move it to a standards organization with IPR protection so that we can continue to develop it further.
Okay, great. Thank you very much once more. And looking forward for the future work around that topic. It's super interesting and definitely helps a lot from the perspective of getting interoperability into the wallet space. Okay. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you for your time. And we'll hear each other within the next 2 weeks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rory. Thanks, everyone.
Bye all.